What's up, Myco family? Myco Trovic here, and welcome back to my podcast, where together we are going to grow in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom. Today I have a special guest. We have Bobby of Agar Boy, someone I've been following for basically my entire time in the Instagram community, someone I've been following closely. Today we're going to talk a little bit about him, his journey through mycology, and an upcoming event, the Entheogen Expo in California. Bobby, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on the show. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Thank you for having me, Ben. Glad to be here and speak about myself and some upcoming event.
Yeah, man, I'm super pumped. And again, thank you. I hope you had a happy new year and that this year brings you a very fruitful and prosperous experience. I'm super excited to get into it today. I guess first and foremost, let's just go ahead and give everybody a little bit of your background. Like, where did your interest for mycology begin? Like, how did you get into the industry, or what was your like precursor event that even got you interested in all of this?
I would say it would be with the culinary background I had. It kind of led me to stray away from mushrooms because I didn't like them at all, like gourmet ones at least. I was trying like the cheap button ones from the store, just dirty fruit when I was younger. And as I grew up, I was like, I never want to work with those. And finally, I had actually great mushroom dish, and it was in Oaxaca. And that kind of led me to eat more gourmet mushrooms. But before all that, I kind of visited Mexico and seen fields of mushrooms. And it's a dried lake bed, essentially. Once a year, it dries out and the cows go and graze it. So it's kind of like half ranch where my family lives down in Michoacan. And I collected a bunch of mushroom spores, not thinking much of it. And a year or 2 years later, I find this community online looking for wild mushroom spores. And so I was like, okay, let me create a different Instagram. Let me try to get, some interest on these wild landrace spores I collected. And little did I know, there's like a whole community on Facebook, on Reddit, and it just kept growing. And it's kind of led me to where I'm now. And I kind of still do it all, grow a little bit, focus sometimes on genetics, working with spore, landrace varieties. But for now, I do see myself probably only working with the landrace and sclerotia producing varieties. Just from all of the experience I've had, sclerotia have been the most friendly to me. So that's kind of where I'm at now and how I've grown. It was just from collecting spores. Now I kind of eat gourmet mushrooms, but not as much as I would say medicinal ones.
Yeah, that's great. So very much like you, I grew up with like a mycophobia almost. And some of my first like memorable experiences with mushrooms were like the canned sliced mushrooms. Yeah. They were like chewy and I just did not like them. And probably not until I think I grew my own lion's mane and made like some just like pan-seared kind of like lion's mane. I wasn't really interested in the gourmets. I was more interested in the psychedelics. But what were some of the first mushrooms? You talked a little bit about like collecting like wild spore samples. Like, what did that look like? What kind of varieties or strains or things like that were you finding out there?
So those were cubensis. They were really big cubensis. A photo I still use nowadays is like me holding the two cubes over my head, like giant eyes, because they were about, I'd say, a small plate size cap. And I collected them. I worked the variety, and they're known as El Pandillo, which translates to English as the gang. And it's just the ranch that I collected them from. But I thought it was funny for like the gang to be the name of the mushroom. So I just left it as the gang. But I have some spores around here. I don't have them prepped at the moment to show off, but it's a pretty big piece of foil, one of my biggest ones, and I could say around like the same size of an iPhone or a small plate, but it's pretty big fruit. But yeah, cubensis would be the first variety I collected from spore, and now when I go to Mexico, I try to make plates of wild varieties I find, but it's not as easy to collect spores from other varieties than it is for like cubes. So
right.
Still novice to that.
So you were collecting spores. Were you into like mycology in some like, how would you say, like what capacity would you say you were interested in mycology that made you want to go and collect spores?
I would say my interest was barely there from high school. I was just out of high school, started traveling out of high school once I finished. But in high school, I would just eat like these gold caps, and I'm like, oh, they're gold caps. I'm like, all right, cool, whatever, you know, just eat them. And then I went to Mexico and tried the El Pandillo, which I was like, all right, these are also what I see as gold caps. But as I started to learn more, everyone calls everything gold caps. So I'm like, all right, these are Cubensis. So I could say Cubensis were the first variety I tried, and it wasn't a microdose. So it was a bit of an eye-opener for me and a bit scary in the beginning. I had like a group of friends, and some of us fell off from that trip. It was so like eye-opening. It was like kind of had us in a deep talk where we're like, you know, we all learn what we needed to learn, but now it's time to learn separately. So it's a fun thing, but also has to be respectful because it could separate ways. But yeah, cubes were my first variety, I'd say.
That's pretty cool. You got to collect some like wild landrace stuff. That's something I've yet to do. I have only gotten, you know, samples like Full Moon Party from Thailand. I now have the Oklahoma mushroom fungi. They're like local, you know, Oklahoma cubensis, which I didn't know they grew out there. That's pretty cool. I mean, and then to be able to take that home and like domesticate it, so to speak, is pretty cool. So you've got like a cornerstone like piece that you get to, you know, share. I think it's pretty awesome. I was going to ask you, what kind of like information or content kind of like shaped you or elevated you to where you're at now? So you started off as like, you know, a novice, you were collecting spores, and then what has that grown into today?
So a lot of it has started from Shroomery. Unfortunately, it's like the last place I recommend people nowadays.
Yep.
But it was all Shroomery. Had got me started there, and my main vendor or platform that helped me grow was Doc Dink Seeds. He works a lot with Still Magnolia. He's actually the person that hybridized the Still Magnolia, and he works closely with cannabis. He's really known in the cannabis community, and he just happened to get in the micro community around, or started selling to the micro community around the time that I got into it. And thankfully, he gifted me a bunch of stuff, allowed me to work with a lot of his work, and it was a huge jumpstart on my grow. And once I kind of strayed away from the learning aspect, I was like, I got this. My first varieties were PE. He sent me a bunch of spawn for PE, and it was from spore. So it's like also something I won't tell people to work with is like, put spore to grain. Back then when I had did it, all my tubs were successful. And like, if I were to try that now, it's just like, I'm like, why did I do this? Why did I do this? But yeah. At the time, it worked out. I had beautiful tubs of PE. I was growing in like 82 Fahrenheit here in Coachella Valley, where it was super hot. And then I tried to grow Mazatec, which they grew fine, but they weren't as prolific as PE. And then I learned about overheating my tubs. So my first grow was very successful, but unfortunately, I didn't have the learning curve to know where it went successful. I just knew it went successful. I was like, why? Like, why did it happen so perfectly? And it took me a while to realize, like, oh, I just changed up my whole technique. And so I went back to Doc Dink Seeds and started learning once again from him. And it just, learning from one point is probably the best thing I can do. And if that learning point isn't the best for me, I would go on to the next mentor. And that's kind of something I recommend as well to novice. It's just like, focus on one mentor. If it's not working out for you, go to the next. And technique, even if you're not learning from a mentor, but it's nice to try it all. But usually it's just stick with one and it's good to go. Now I won't work from spore though. So from spore to grain, at least spore to agar is the way for me.
Very similar. Starting off, I was doing brown rice flour cakes and I was doing spore to those and somehow had success. I don't know how the mushroom gods blessed us, I guess, you know. When you first started, were you doing tubs and have you kind of stuck with that technique for the most part?
Yeah, so all of my varieties I grew in tubs. My first tubs were unmodified and they were PE and they did just so great. So I was like, all right, like I could do this. And I bought them seeing that they're like more of a expert or intermediate learning variety, and I was like, I could do that, like I like a challenge. And it worked. So the Ingram Mazatex, like these are the easy ones that everyone says contam resistant at the time, and I grew them out and they're just kind of like sad. It was like a little sad grow, and I was like, what? Like something's off here. And now I learned, now I look back and I always remind people, just go back to sport. Your ride ain't producing as prolific as it once did. Try a spore run, a multi-spore run. Won't hurt you.
That's good advice. That's, yeah, I mean, because we see so many, even, yeah, in my own growth, like degradation of the genetics, and it's always good to run them back and invigorate them. That's good, good mindset. Speaking of mindset, how have mushrooms impacted you or changed you, like in a positive way, or always? You know, I know you had mentioned kind of growing apart from like friend groups, very similar. Like, I think it, I would say the psilocybin mushrooms in particular kind of helped to give me like a bird's eye view of my life and things that were feeding my soul. And some of that was people who were not, you know. So was it kind of a situation like that where you were kind of like, these relationships weren't feeding me, or and or what other mindsets have you adopted from your usage of mushrooms, or the, I guess, the growing process too?
So at the time, in high school, I was just eating them to have fun. Like, mushrooms were my first substance. I was a straight edge kid, and at the time, I was like against smoking cannabis, drinking, yada yada. And my girlfriend, my like first girlfriend in high school, was like, "Hey, I got mushrooms. You want to eat them with me after school?" And I was like, "Oh, like they look dry, little mushrooms. Like they can't do much to me." So I ate them, and I couldn't walk. And I was at her house, and I couldn't walk. I was like, "Man." And it was a nice experience, and it was like a very enjoyable one because I was with someone I was happy with. And then we tried it in a big group of friends, and that's kind of where everyone's energy, mindset, and maybe even like subconscious guilt trippiness all came out. And it was just like everyone was venting about themselves. And I feel like we might have opened up to each other a little bit too much, where we showed each other we don't like actually our group, everyone in this group of friends, and some of them still hang out. I still do talk to some of them, but yeah, it did split us apart as high schoolers, and it kind of did push us into that, you know, we're done with high school, let's move on to things. And now I do talk to one of the people still from that trip, and he is involved in the Entheogen Expo, Michael Kors, and thankfully he's still been a good friend. My other friends, I would still call them friends. I have a lot of love for them. They're still in the valley. They're still doing their thing. But yeah, I don't recommend mushrooms like in a huge group setting all the time. And I know a lot of people do recommend that. But for me, no. It's I'd rather be a one-on-one learning experience, me and the fungi, because too much energy gets involved. Some people crying. Some people start crying even though they're laughing. And it can get a little bit. It can get a little bit overwhelming, and some people are more experienced that can just sit back and take it. But now I just, if I eat mushrooms, I just let it do its thing, and have to look back on why it made me think that and such, not rather than like, oh, these thoughts just came just to come to mind at the time in high school before that trip. Like I said, it was just for fun, but now I like to sit back and like, why did I see that? Why am I having those thoughts of my childhood? Why did I have this environment growing up? It's not my fault. So it's like in a sense, I've started integrating after each trip is the best way to put it.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's cool to see the change that we all have, and it's almost similar. Almost every experience is similar, but different in that one person's own experience too. So it's kind of cool. You've grown from it. And very similar in a way, like I used to enjoy having a friend or two with me, or even like a girlfriend, you know, like at the time when I had first started. But now it's like, I have to be alone. I want to be in the woods with the trees and the ground. I don't want to hear anybody, know anybody is around, and just, yeah, experience and just like review my life as is, you know. That's, it's kind of cool how things change, but I think there's like matured mushroom, connoisseurs, and it sounds like you're in that realm too. That's awesome. So I'm interested to know, because I've been following you for years now, and from the time you started till now, what is your personal like observation of where the industry has kind of come and where it's going? Like from where we were maybe like, it almost seems like almost like five years ago, probably a good like solid 3 years ago. From that time till now, what has changed in your opinion?
So for me, I had got into this industry probably when the cannabis industry was booming. Like, you know, the cannabis industry is like already there. You start seeing a lot of the same products on the shelf. So I was like, let me start working with the mushroom community. So at that time, I didn't see too much promotions, too many events. Now you see people in your DMs like, hey, do you want colonized grain? At the time, there wasn't people reaching out, vending me these things. There was like more of on Instagram, DM me with the face picture, your name and your location to be accepted into like my mycology page. And now people such as yourself and, you know, Bass, like their accounts are out there and it's showing what they do. And we're showing ourselves that we are humans working with these medicines. And I enjoy that a lot. I was scared also at first to show my face or disclose who I was, where I live. But in a sense, I do take a lot of pride in that now. But it also might be because my grow isn't, you know, in my area anymore. So it could also be that at the time I was like growing on my kitchen tub, I mean, my tub on my kitchen stove, refrigerator, I mean, not the stove, on the refrigerator.
Yeah. Right.
It was fine. But now I see a huge community. I see it growing a lot. A lot of people are saying it's getting overpacked, like the blue rush. But I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I still think there's a lot of people that stray away from not only mushrooms, but cannabis. And soon I personally believe that more folks will open up to it. And there will be space for all these vendors, all these culture vendors, fruit vendors. I personally believe that there will be space for all of us, just like there was in the black market for cannabis. You've seen all these shops open, churches essentially open as well in my area, and there was plenty of space for the black market. It adjusted well, but I think we're in the point of adjusting. I see like packs for like $200, like not too long ago, but now I've seen the prices adjusting. So I'm like, all right, nature is curing itself. Like, but in the beginning, I thought, as well, like this is getting overwhelming, there's too many people, but I think there was just more supply than there was demand. But I think the demand will be adjusting a lot sooner, and a lot of the hidden folks will come out, just like a lot of these like microdosing mom groups or microdosing coaches are coming out. I'm not too big on microdosing, but hey, if what heals you is what's going to heal you, I get more satisfied now seeing people growing the varieties that I have available, rather than me sitting back and being like, I have to eat an eighth to feel, you know, some satisfaction. It's like someone posts me and I'm like, hey, I grew these out. I'm like, wow, man, you dedicated a whole 2 months, a month to the genetics I worked. And to me, that's healing. To me, that makes me feel great. Regardless if it's like some contam or just not the best grow. I'm like, hey, you're learning with, like, that's great for me. That heals me. So that's where I'm at now, is just healing from watching other people heal and being accessible to the community is kind of what helps me feel like I'm healing, and seeing the growth from back then, no one asking, being hidden, to now where people are in your DMs, like asking for help and such. Like, that's nice. That's really nice. And I think the community is just growing. People are overwhelmed, but it's just growing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There was a time where there was, it still is kind of in that phase where it's like oversaturation, lots of product, and there really wasn't too, it's not like cannabis. It's not even a daily consumable. Now, some will make it seem that way with microdosing. I personally don't even microdose anymore. Like, if I need to like clear my head, I get my cold plunge, or I go on a walk, or I work out, or, you know, hang out with my girlfriend or friends. But at one point it was what kept my head above water, so to speak. And yeah, now I feel like it's the intermittent macrodose that like refreshes or like defrags my computer, so to speak, you know? Yeah. And everyone's different. It's cool to hear your experience. And now you're in a place where, yeah, I mean, gosh, how many DMs, you know, do we get where that person might be one question away from having their first successful grow. And then they have a whole totally new outlook on life and have either, you know, had a big, huge experience in their healing journey or just starting it. So that's a really cool place to be. And I'm honored to share that like with you, in that we're, you know, pillars in our community and people look up to us. I think I first met you when, what was it? I don't know what year it was, 2022 maybe, at the Oakland psych, or was it the LA?
It was LA.
The Hyphae conference. That was cool. You had a booth then, and I was like, whoa, dude's killing it, you know? So how has that changed? And I kind of want to get into, if you could, like how from then till now, and now we have this Entheogen Expo that I'll be attending here. It's in February, correct?
Yep, coming up, almost a month away now.
Yeah, dude, tell me about it. I want to hear about from like your first vending experience. What was that like? And then what prompted the expo?
So I thankfully come from Coachella Valley, where there is a lot of music and arts festivals. So I've had experience with like these festivals, gatherings, and even like black market sessions. Mm. And I was invited to a few of those, and the vending fee was like, oh, just show up, be free, give us a little bit of product and you can vend. So that was nice. And then I was like, let me explore out of my city. So thankfully at the time, Sai that was working close with Reggie, they invited me to their event, and I was like, let me vend. So I vended. The vending price didn't look too friendly, but I did see the community and the impact that Reggie's events did have. And so I was like, let me chance it. And I thankfully made my money back and more. And I realized like, wow, like this is cool. This is fun. Like this is where I actually get to talk to people. Like I don't have to scroll through my DMs and be like, where's that conversation I was at? And
yeah,
people were there in person, like have a full conversation like I had with you there. And it was nice meeting you there and plenty of other growers. So I was like, these people are real, like, cool. There's more than just social media we all go to. There's a place of interest, like in physical form that we can meet. And I appreciate Reggie for providing that. And it was fun to first been there. But just recently, Tatum and I and my other friend here from a native reservation, we're just soaking in a mineral bath here in Desert Hot Springs. And we're like, let's put it together an event. We have Michael Blast, where he can teach agar and plants. And then we have Wumbo, who can teach breeding. And Miss Mush is like, I'll put a tub together for people. And I'm like, I can isolate agar. It's something I did at Reggie's events at the Oakland Hyphae Psychedelic Conference. Yep. He allowed me to do workshops where I was working with group of people, and I gave them all petri dishes, one colonized and one just a pre-poured plate, and I did transfers with everyone, and we just talked about like what would be the best part to transfer off each plate, and I let everyone choose like the part that they wanted to isolate off of. And so I had that experience, that was fun, and so I wanted to do that at the next event. That didn't happen. It was too busy for me to fill in my workshop, and I had this overwhelming support of friends that wanted to do stuff like that. Like Boss, he was like, hey, I'll do agar alchemy at your event. I'm like, what? Like, this is really like, I just pushed a little rock off the mountain, and as it started rolling, it just started gathering momentum. And I appreciate Tatum and Adrian for that. They are two folks that I still will be working with at the next event. So it's nice for me to first be a vendor and have that aspect as a vendor, but now being an organizer, it's kind of like the same door, just a different view is how I'd say it. Because I'm still working closely with the community. I still have to have good networking and be present in human form. And I know a lot of these entities on social media are like, I just have an internet pool, and it's like, that's cool, but it's also nice like to be networking and human. And I think that's what I find my most satisfaction from, only because I wanted to be in the political background, and I went to school for debate and speaking and such, and now I'm more of a listener. So I'm like, oh dang, it's weird how I went to school for that, but now I'd rather just sit back and listen.
Listening is the oldest form of learning, right? Yeah, being the observer and watching. I prefer that stance more or less a lot of the time, even though it may appear I'm like the super social guy and I'm like talking to all these people. Like really, like when I'm done here, I'm going to go lay on my couch and get on YouTube for probably like an hour. I love being indoors, but my social battery is like, you know, only so big. But I do have a big social battery for events. I'm super excited to go and see how just one meet more people in person. I think it's so important. It's one of my goals this year is to like really connect the community, and the live events are like that on steroids. Like my podcast can reach, social spectrum so big as it grows. But when you go in person and you have, people to talk to face to face, that's like my favorite. So that's cool. So you went from vending to now you're going to have your own, expo. So what prompted the name? Like, where is this going to take place? Can you give some more details about it so people can kind of get hyped up about it?
Yeah, so this will be our second event. It's going to be another successful event. Thankfully, our first one, like I said, was just overwhelming support, kind of to the point where I was like, this, and this is happening. And everyone that volunteered or wanted to participate did that. So at our second event, we'll be having that again. It'll be a nice, successful event. We do have two stages. One stage will be mostly for the panels and some workshops, and then the outdoor stage will be for only workshops and music, and that will be throughout like the vending space. But we also have a speakeasy that will be curated by my best friend Adrian here from Coachella Valley. He will be curating like a hash area for us to have a hash consumption lounge. So nice. For those that enjoy cannabis, hash, good quality, we'll have a locally sourced, organic, non-till living soil vendors there. So it's good stuff. We will be having, for those that don't know, Joey Santor, Crime Pays But Buy and He Doesn't. He'll be visiting. He'll be showing us some propagation, sowing seeds such as like Lefaforia. And we have someone I learned from, a mentor, one of my biggest mentor, Doc Dank Seeds will be present. I believe he will be showing us some techniques on growing bulk. So yeah, if you love either of those guys, we have a bunch of other folks coming down. Michael Oakland will be down. Lotus Entheogenic Church from Oakland will be down. So we have some pretty nice people coming through, and pretty cool people that I was able to learn from and gain inspiration from that I'm now able to share space with. So for me, just looking up and idolizing these people, to being able to gather them all in one space for me is one of my biggest growths that I feel personally. So it's nice to meet your idols, your mentors, even though they say sometimes it's not. It's been one of my best moments in my life. So I'm happy for it. Hope everyone's ready to learn. We might have some photography classes by some of the best mycologists out there. So we'll be having some nice things going on, and plenty of vendors. You'll be there, so even better.
We'll be there. I'm super excited.
Quite a bit of
If there's any way I can provide value in any shape or form, if that's being on a panel or helping teach, like please, we'll talk maybe off camera about that. But man, I would love to be a part of it in any shape or form. I'll be bringing my lady. We're going to be, enjoying the scene. I'm going to be taking some footage, some exclusive Patreon stuff. So I'm hoping everybody enjoys that too. Super excited. I'm really happy that you're including things like cannabis. You talked a little bit about some sacred plants like the Lefaforia. That's cool, man. That's like all encompassing, because it's not just mushrooms. Whereas I believe it's a huge pivotal part. There are so many other things that need awareness, like, the lands of Texas, the native lands that are being destroyed, and these things that aren't really easy to propagate even in in labs, like the Lefaforia. Yeah, you can do tissue culture and grafting, things like that. I play around with that too. I'm a cactus guy myself. But that's really cool, man. Super excited. And do you plan on having more than one, or just you want to do one a year, or what's that look like for you?
So we are planning to have one a year. We might pair with other groups. I might be leaking too much information, but our next event will be, I believe, in Oakland at the Lotus Entheogenic Church. We will be pairing with Michael Oakland and Michael Maven, I believe is her Instagram, or Silasa Baytrip is what I met them as. So we'll be pairing with them under a different name for the event, but we will be holding one at the Entheogen Expo once a year. Our next one, I believe, will be in NorCal either way next year. But yeah, we don't want to do the events too much, but we do also want to have like a beach day, foraging day, where it's completely free, it's accessible, people can enjoy outdoors with us and our group and our team for free. A lot of this, I don't come from the best financial background. So a lot of these things growing up, like this Coachella Festival, as a teenager, I wasn't able to just shoot $400 or $500 to go to this music festival.
Yeah.
But now as an adult, you know, I look back on finances and stuff. I'm like, I could save that much money over a year and attend these events, and I'm a little bit better financially. So it's just not being able to access that as a child or a younger adult made me want to have events that are more accessible to the community, and especially Southern California. There's a lot of hype and such, and there's finances, but there's also a fine line between like the working class and the class, the surviving class, and people, I think, see it all as one class, and it's not like that, in my opinion. So just accessibility is what I want for my events, is my main thing.
That's understandable, and that's very thoughtful of you. I'm kind of interested in your background. So you said your family basically comes from Mexico. Were you born here? Were you born there? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I am a third generation here. So I wasn't born in Mexico. My parents were born here, and their parents were born in Mexico and then brought here as children. So it makes me like second technically, but I see it as third only because they were taught to learn English. They were taught to be Americanized. My dad and my mother didn't feel that it was a place for me to learn Spanish. So unfortunately, I grew up what they call pocho, which is like I'm brown on the outside and they like talk to me in Spanish and I don't have a reply. So they call me pocho pretty much. And now as I grow up and I visit Mexico, I take it the language pridefully. I've learned a lot enough to speak and travel Mexico, and I go more than once a year now. So I do see myself Hispanic. I was born here in the Coachella Valley on Native American land. So I have a lot of Mesoamerican or Native American influence on my life. But also as I go to Mexico, I've been getting a lot of like this Latino or Hispanic influence there. So it's kind of like blood-borne Hispanic, but very influenced on the Native American aspect of life. Powwows and such every month here in my area. So something I grew up attending and learning from, thankfully.
Those are some cool cultures, man. I'm interested to know about your family's, or if they know. I don't know if they know. My family knows what I do now as of like maybe like 2 years ago, but what does your family know of, or how do they support what you do? What does that look like for you?
So, I do get some help from family. I have like my little cousins clean my tubs and jars, you know, for allowance, and they're happy to do that. Nice. I come over like twice a month to do that. So a lot of them are aware of what I do. I do have some family that's like frowning upon what I do, where they like condescendingly ask me like, how's your job? And I'm like, it's not my job. It's my brand. It's my business. Like, what do you mean? Like, it is a job, but just the tone that they say it, I can see it more as like, oh, like how's your hustling or your trapping? And I personally don't see it that way. Especially since I'm not selling like packs or boxes to survive. Yeah. A lot of the stuff I sell is grow kits, LCs. So it's like a fine line also for it to be a precursor to growing mushrooms and being like this illegal substance. And I have family that probably won't visit as much because they see me with 5 pressure cookers in my backyard prepping corn. They're like, yeah, let's not go over again. Like, that was a little scary, but it's frowned upon, unfortunately. One of my biggest motivations in growing mushrooms was actually from my mother. When I had first collected spores, she had bad health. And as I got more into the community, she did pass. She had dialysis. She was on dialysis for like 6-7 years. And she unfortunately passed. She had a stroke. She passed. It led to a bunch of complications. And me being born on her birthday, she left me with this, I wouldn't say like burden, but it was this choice to take her off of life support. And for me, like being born on my mom's birthday, like ripped me apart. And me being like, yeah, I'm like my mom, like she's a vegetable, tore me apart. And at that time I wasn't growing. So I learned to grow. she was always like, oh, these are so pretty. They're like snowflakes, like all the spore prints. And she would look at them. And
yeah,
at the time, it was just art for me. But then I started learning. I started growing. And as I learned, I did feel my mom present. I did feel her happy to me. So for me. So some of my first grows, I dedicated about half the tub to her shrine, or her ofrenda is what we would call it in Spanish. Right. It's an altar for the past. And I gave her all the dry mushrooms, and it was just something that kind of pushed me. And every time I grow and I heal now, it's like something that makes me feel better about my mom being happy for me to collect mushrooms. And she didn't get to witness any of my grows, unfortunately, but she did. She was present for them, is what I personally feel. She wasn't here, yeah, but she was here. And now it's something that made me sad at the time. Now I'm happy I'm able to look back, and her altar still has some of the first mushrooms I grew, one of the first mushroom chocolates I made, some of the first sclerotia I grew. So a lot of this does come from a loss in my family, and now it's like a point where I can look back and be happy about. And I would say my mother, thankfully, pushed me to collect spores, and now I'm here and happy to be here and looking back. And yeah, she was one of my biggest supports. So I appreciate my mother. Docting seeds, thankfully, had a time to take out of his day to push me into growing. And then all my friends nowadays, the community I have now, you, is going to keep me motivated. So it just ongoing support. But in the beginning, it was probably just my mother. I had more people against it. I did lose it. Like, some friends were like, I don't want to go to his house. Like, what if his doors get busted in? And I had friends that were like, I don't like it when he works with a substrate. It smells like cow manure. I'm like, I don't even use manure. Like, what do you mean? So it just, like, everyone's going to have their opinion, their say. You even get people nowadays being like, how dare you use corn? I'm like, oh my gosh. So it can't satisfy everyone, but
yeah,
I had less support than I had, more haters than in my family than I had support, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, thank you for pursuing what you do, because if you hadn't, you know, there would be so many people who weren't impacted. And I'm personally proud of you. Like, it's an honor to have you here and to be talking with you first and foremost. So I'm sure your mom's proud of you too, man.
Appreciate
it. Cool that you were able to have like an offering for her ofrenda, and to like be able to look back and like give homage to her and for what you do too. So like, to see it evolving, it's really cool, man. And look at you now, like you're having this expo, you're on year two. Like, man, that's exciting, man.
Yeah, it's a nice.
Say again.
A nice growth. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, of course. I'm really interested to know, like, I mean, I've kind of already heard some inklings of it, but what is like the energy you're bringing to 2024? Like, what are some of your goals, I guess, outside of the expo? Like, what are some of the things you're trying to do, or some things that you're passionate about?
So for 2024, I already released some peaks, but I will be releasing more merchandise. I want to focus a lot on accessible merchandise that focuses around mycology. But at the same time, I do want to continue my passion for sclerotia producing varieties. I want to start a brand. I already have a brand like lined up and queued up. I just more of packaging and such had to get set going. But I do want to push a sclerotia brand where I'll be selling sclerotia to these entheogenic churches, and it will be accessible to the community that way. But I just personally want to spend a lot of my time growing sclerotia, seeing some test experiments on what they produce more on, which grain they might produce better on, which ones are going to be easier to clean up, and so on. But sclerotia and merchandise is probably my main focus this year, besides the expo. But a minor goal of mine would be to gather a group of friends and travel somewhere in Mexico, possibly even Yucatan, and go mushroom foraging. So,
wow.
I've explored a few of these places, but now my minor goal this year is to get some friends, some social media acquaintances to go forage with me in the wild in these parts of Mexico. It just makes it a lot more affordable if five of us put in on an Airbnb for 10 days and such. So gotcha. A minor goal is traveling and foraging more wild varieties.
Amazing. Well, I need to get my passport, but I would definitely be interested in going with you. Yeah. Just throwing it out there for sure. Anything wild forged and, you know, exploring new lands is amazing. I definitely want to see, dude, I want to see some of those pyramids over there in Mexico. That's been like one of my life goals. Like, I think Egypt is one of those places like everyone wants to go to. I know it's probably amazing, but there's like not just like one or two, there's like hundreds. They're like, and I know they're still unraveling a bunch of, you know, in the forestry over there. So that's pretty interesting. So basically you're focusing on the merch, some travel, and you've mentioned sclerotia a few times now. So for those who don't know, sclerotia being like the mycelium that forms essentially like, I wouldn't call them fruiting bodies, but it, or they technically are, but they grow essentially underground, or if you inoculate grain, you get to skip that whole I mean, yeah, you can definitely, you know, spawn them as well, but I'm interested in like, what's your interest with those, and is that like a predominant cultivar you're focusing on, and can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So once again, it was one of the first, like going back to this whole spore collecting, I had collected some Mexicana spores and I put them aside and I finally worked things from spore. So I have this Jalisco variety that I work, and it's been producing a lot of sclerotia for me. And in the beginning I was like,
wow,
what is this contam in this jar? Like, what is this growing? And I even spawned tubs of it and I was like, why is it growing like fuzzy mycelium? I didn't like it. And I had like this huge prolific tub of fruit. And then I went to go throw the cake away, be naive still at the time. I found a bunch of like sclerotia. Now I know that they are sclerotia, but I found a bunch of chunks like breaking the substrate, and there's like little fissures in the substrate. So that led me to pick them. I ate some. They didn't taste the best, but they did taste a lot more better than cubes, I would say. More sweet taste, a little bit nutty. And even the mycelium has a little bit of a sweet scent to it. But
yeah, definitely.
I enjoy them just because you can store them fresh. There's a lot more, I believe, alkaloids present in the fresh fruit bodies than actually dehydrating them. So for something to grow discreetly like that and kind of be looked over is what drew my interest towards them. I'm like, these things just grew slowly in the substrate, and I seen it happening, but I wasn't completely aware of like why it was happening. And then after I picked the fruit, I waited for a second flush. It didn't happen, but like I said, those fissures appeared, and I ate the sclerotia eventually, and I was like, okay, those are something I enjoy. Like, people always level, not everyone, but I always see like energetic, psychedelic visuals, like these bars where people are rating each variety. And that's probably one of the only varieties where I felt I can rate it compared to Cubensis. Like, a lot of Cubensis, in my opinion, make me feel like the sedated, relaxed feeling. But sclerotia was something that allowed me to work and be a little bit more energetic. So it could be this placebo thing, but I personally enjoy truffles for recreational use rather than Cubensis. I won't eat Cubensis at a music festival, but I will eat a handful of sclerotia. It doesn't put me on like my ass as fast. It's not sedating. So
right.
I haven't tested fresh sclerotia. Wumble Michael is, I believe, going to be one of the first guys to do that. He's been looking for labs for that, but I have yet to test and check like the alkaloids present and fresh sclerotia, but I personally do believe a difference when I feel them. So I enjoy them. They store fresh for around 6 months. You can grow them in your tub and leave them in your tub and forget about them for an extra month, rather than being like, oh, I had to get that at night, they're going to drop spores. Like, the sclerotia are fine. They'll do their own thing. They'll grow. You can miss them. You don't have to miss them, but they're one of the easiest varieties, one of the more, in my opinion, like I said, alkaloid present varieties fresh, because most people will dry cubes. You won't really see someone come to you and be like, here's some fresh cubes. It's most likely like, here's some fresh sclerotia. So that's probably what led me and my interest into sclerotia. They're just overlooked.
I think so too. That whole factor that you can harvest and then just leave them. Or you can just leave them in the grain bag. It's like use. And they do have like a very distinct, similar to cubensis, like smell, but they smell like, I wouldn't say off, but they smell different. For those who haven't grown them, they won't know. But even the plate, like when you open the plate to do transfers, it's like, it's present. So let me ask you a question. Is this something that you wild collected and then you grew it out and then realized there was sclerotia?
No, so I got these Jalisco Mexicana variety from SE Prints. At the time, I was
okay,
just like,
I want to clarify. I was like, man, that's amazing. I was like, holy cow. Yeah.
It'd be nice to have wild ones. That's a goal of mine, is to find wild Mexicana. I did get to see wild Zapatecorum, but they were just pins, and it was in San Jose Pacifico in Oaxaca. So it was nice to experience that. I didn't get to see any wild cubes. Everything I seen were already dried. So seeing the bodies fresh is kind of what makes me have more of a passion. Seeing them, all the phenotypes of each variety looks a lot different. And then just seeing, like you said, it's not a fruiting body. It's like this little blob of a myceliated mass. So I think that little form also got me interested in it. But I did purchase them under the assumption that they were just a cube variety. And then I got the spore print, and it's like the size of a Q-tip, like the whole diameter, just a small little print. I was like, what? So I grew it out, and it had so much sclerotia. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. That's interesting. And then made me look further into all the people providing these sclerotia-producing varieties. And for me, it's been one of the more lax varieties, because like you said, you can't get to it, leave it on grain. It doesn't look, you know, the best on grain sometimes, but you can just leave it. I have a jar here, actually. But yeah, like in the beginning, I was like, that's contaminated. And I'm like, that's all contaminated.
Yeah.
But now as they take out the grain, it's just sclerotia pressed against the variety. But this one is from ATL7 from Max. This has been here since like February of this year, so last year. Wow. But it's just a jar I never put into grain. But yeah, it's a very friendly variety, consumption wise and cultivation wise.
That inspires me to get back into it. I think I had grown that ATL7 myself, and I did an experiment on my Patreon where I just left a bag for a year, and then I harvested just to see if there would be any extra growth. Or actually I did one at 6 months and then one a year, and it was almost the same weight. So I find that you really don't need to leave them longer than, I would say, like 4 or 5 months max. But that's cool that I do like the option of just being able to throw it into some grain and just let it do its thing. You're going to get something without that extra step of having to spawn it. So that's cool. Do you have any other like favorite varieties you like to run? I know you had mentioned the Mazatec. Those I think by far are probably still one of my favorite varieties. I unfortunately have lost it. I can source it again, obviously, but any other varieties that you've enjoyed or that are most notable?
One variety that I can't say I've cultivated all the way to success has been a Michigan Zapatecorum cut from Alan Rockefeller. And it has this blue bruising to the mycelium. The only thing on grain, it's very, very slow. So it might just be the grain selection I'm using, which is corn. But I have the variety here. Let me grab it. But it's like known for, I believe it's sequenced into Zapatecorum. But the variety is Sierra Luisa, is I believe going to be the name Alan gives it. But it's one of my favorite varieties on agar. I have a lot of varieties on agar that I have grown out. Like plastic eating variety, the ghost oyster. I have a few like bioluminescent that I can't say I've cultivated, but I enjoy them on agar a lot. Some of my favorite I've grown though are varieties you work with, still magnolia, like you said, the Mazatec. Anything PE has been a nice run for me. It's just since my first run have been PE, I've just grown like more of want to grow PE varieties. So still magnolia, DC Max, PE, anything that have the more short fat like stipes is what I enjoy. Still magnolia right now, sclerotia, and Leucictic Full Moon Party are some of my always in rotation. I enjoy seeing them. So those are probably my favorite right now. The Leucictic Full Moon Party, I believe, was isolated by Dr. Mario Michael, this cut at least. But I know there's a few cuts out there of it, and it's a nice variety. It's a stop growing kind of variety, but I like it because it's like set it and forget it variety for me.
Yeah. That's cool. Everyone's got their like top four. I have like a couple that I keep in rotation. I've been doing like more breeding now, so I kind of try to focus on those more. But yeah, like Steel Magnolia will always be like a fan favorite for me. Just like how crazy big they get. They have that like awesome, like, you know, semi-tan cap, and they're fat, man. I don't get like really crazy like second flushes out of them, but that's actually almost kind of nice. You get like one nice one, you know, and that's cool with me. And then the Lucidics, though, I haven't ran any of those in a long time. I think the last one I had was like Lucidic, what is it, Albino Treasure Coast. That was the last like Lucidic one I had run. But those are fun, man. It's really cool to see everyone has their own like favorites and whatnot. And again, I'm inspired to grow some more sclerotia. Definitely, at least put them in this in some grain bags and put them in my closet. Let them go for like 6 months, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm interested. What are some of your like core values that you live by in your life, and how does that translate into, or how does that like manifest into your life? Things that you notice about yourself, or things that maybe people have commented on.
Thankfully, I've always had good networking, so that's one passion I will take from myself, and that's one thing that keeps me going in this community, is being able to say I have good networking. And let me see, I scrolled past the question. Oh, and then my belief is like to usually just be happy with it, like regardless if you know you're gonna succeed, like you might fail, so just be happy, and vice versa, like you might fail but you're wanting to succeed, so as long as you're having fun and happy about doing what you're doing, then success or fail, like it's going to be a nice learning curve. And I think one thing people get is like, oh, I grew this tub, I can grow any variety, and it's like, no, just stay on the learning student, you know, perspective of things, and it'll be more fun than being like, I should have happened this way. It should have been this way. So just do it for fun. Of course, you know, the end results might lead most likely to money, but just try to do it for fun and you'll have a lot more success, in my opinion, mentally and also like physically cultivating, you'll have a lot more fun. My beliefs are, of course, just be happy with it and give credit to people that are sharing you these varieties. Try not to expand it too fast. I know there's a lot of people that buy a variety, add it to their menu before they even get the variety in the mail. And it's like, okay, like if that's the way you want it to be, that's your morals, then okay. Just know that I personally push for people to at least grow up from spore at least once. Go back to spore, share the multi-spore plates. But yeah, just kind of giving credit. If you can't do that time work, then just mention the people, give the credit to someone that's did the work for you, essentially. And that's one of my big things is I love to give credit to a lot of my mentors, places I've learned, and that's one of the main things. Give credit and be happy.
Give credit and be happy. Yeah, give credit to those who came before, you know, because essentially all this information that we're sharing with everybody, we didn't make, you know, it came from books that people that wrote those books, people that did the research themselves. And more often than not, those people got taught by someone else. I know we can only go back so far, but it's definitely happened to me too. You know, being that like I do give genetics out to the community, I've seen it where like a week later it's, you know, it's been expanded to like 8 jars and those people are offering them for half the price. I'm like, and no, you know, I'm not looking for accolades. I'm not looking for recognition, but it would be nice, you know, like give credit, you know, give credit where credit's due. I've talked about that with a few people now. I talked about it with Andrew from Mossy Creek Mushrooms. He was big on that. Full Canopy from Colorado, same Full Canopy Genetics, same thing. Like just give credit, because essentially all these people who are winning these cups, most often than not, they got that culture, gave it to them within a year or 2 years, and they've held on to it, done, you know, some multi-spore, ran it back a couple times. But yeah, I like that. Okay, my friend. So we're getting towards the end of the podcast. I have a question that I ask everybody, and you can answer this short form, long form. It's kind of an interpret as you may question, but I'm interested to know, in what ways on a daily basis are you Bobby of Agar Boy? How are you growing in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom?
So for mind, body, and spirit, I think one way I've learned to grow is to do less. Part of me back then, 2-3 years ago, was like, do this at once. And now it's kind of just like, focus on one or two things, stay in my lane. And, you know, if there's an occasional shortcut I can take to explore something else, go for it. But I've learned for me to grow is for me to also do less, like focus on one thing, perfect it. But that's always been a problem with me growing up, is doing multiple things at once and kind of leaving them to procrastinate and marinate in the idea for a while. So now recently it's just to do less on my plate, make sure I'm doing the best at it. But yeah, I'd say to grow is mind, body, and spirit, and mushroom-wise is just to continue connecting with the community. The more I meet more people is going to grow me mind, body, and spirit-wise. And just to keep networking is probably one thing I recommend, and that's what keeps me growing, is networking it personally. And also seeing people that are sharing and growing the varieties I'm growing, and the people that they're healing, like that personally heals me. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I ate 7 grams and I learned something. Like, that doesn't, you know, entirely always make me feel the best, but it makes me feel good. But what makes me feel better and grow mind, body, and spirit is seeing folks work with the genetics that I took time and put passion and love into. So that's kind of what helps me grow. And the next thing will be my merchandise. And so I hope for the accessible clothing line to be something that will help me grow mind, body, and spirit wise. And also mushrooms, because without the mushrooms, there won't really be an influence on my brand or merchandise at all without the fungi. So I would say that's probably, mind, body, spirit wise, is just networking for me, growing. And back then, like I said, I didn't have a community, and now I feel part of this whole other family, in a sense, like a foster mycelium family is how I see it, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Well, networking is so important for many aspects, but networking essentially is community, and you are definitely what I would consider a pillar in our community, someone to look up to or for information. And look at you now, man, you've got this expo coming up. I'm super excited about it. Super grateful that you made time to chat with us, for me to get to know you a little bit more on a personal level, for my community to get to know you. How can these guys support you? Where can they find you? How can they get in contact with you? And going forward, obviously, if you could speak on the expo again, maybe some dates and things like that, but how can they support you most?
So my website is Michael Liner. I do release small batch products, so it would be like sclerotia producing varieties, sclerotia producing grain, and
yes,
liners essentially for tubs. I have a corn based polymer plastic that biodegrades in around 8 to 12 months. And
is it these ones?
Yeah, those are them.
I still have them. Yeah,
hell yeah. Yeah, so those are them. I believe those ones in that packaging might be like V1. We do have a thicker mill now that is our standard, so we do use that. It's nice. I do see brands now pushing non-biodegradable liners, so that's probably the market that I need to get back into. My thing was being biodegradable and earth friendly, but hey, you know, it's a market that a lot of people, I guess, can get to into, so I'm not trying to be like, no, don't do it. All I can do is do that. But all I can say is support earth-friendly products. It will help support me. Michael Liner will be providing more clothing. And yeah, the expo. Come join us at the expo. Don't only come support me, the community. Van will be there. Tatum from Miss Mush SoCal will be there. my best friend Adrian Panicia will be there curating the Hash event. So there will be a lot for everyone. The event will be February 17th in Barrio Logan. For those familiar with the area, it will be a newer vendor. I believe only been there a venue only 6 months. I believe he said it's been there, but it's the Wicked Warehouse. I paired with them. They work with, I believe it's like a flat beers, and they revamp them to have these flavors and recarbonate them, I believe. And so I thought that was cool that, you know, it's more earth-friendly products being put out there. So that kind of drew me to that brand, and little did I know they had a venue. So Barrio Logan, February 17th in Southern California. Feel free to join us. We'll have Basidium once returning. We'll now have, you know, Michael Trofic there. Doc Dank Seeds there. We'll have like quite a bit of few nice entities and, like you said, pillars or mentors in my perspective there. Not only for mushrooms, but for cactus, poppy, and I believe we might have some people speaking on Hape and Sananga.
Nice.
So yeah, come support us and all the medicine worker and spirit wellness folks. So 11 to 7, doors will open at 11, and we'll have speakers going from 11 to 7, and then music will start from 7 to 2 in the morning. Two different stages. The outdoor stage will be playing rock, like punk bands, at the end of the event from 7 to 10, 7 to 11, and then inside stage in the speakeasy, which it's like hidden behind a bookshelf. It's like a giant bookshelf. You open it and it has like a whole club in it. That will be all day. The cannabis will be in there from 11 to 7, but from 7 to 2 in the morning will be the after party. So come make it out to Southern California. Join us, and it will be a nice, beautiful, fresh time in February for us out there. So looking forward to that. We'll have a nice people like Michael Alchemy, Just a Tree Nursery sponsoring our event. So they'll bring like some tortoises, set up a petting zoo for us. And it is a 21 and older event. So unfortunately this time no children will be allowed into it because there is a bar attached to the entire venue. As much as I wanted to be family friendly, it will be adult friendly. So.
Amazing. And also these guys can find you on Instagram too, right? It's AGARBOI.
Yeah, I got our boy.
Yeah, go give him a follow, and yeah, and man, my friend, any other lasting words, sage advice, maybe for the new growers or anything like that that you can give?
I have that somewhere right here. So some advice for me would, for new growers, would to be always have an open mind, and not everyone is in the same environment as you, so. Someone for me to recommend, and someone in New York, like, oh, do this and this and this to your grow tents and have the humidifier this and this time, it probably won't be the same. So if you can, learn from someone locally or someone in the same environment as you to get the best learning curve for your tubs. Of course, take advice from as many people as you can, but just focus on like one or two vendors and their products and learn on those products. And if they don't work for you, go on to the next one, but try to start small. There's a lot to do, and you eventually get into doing all that, but start on a small scale. It's no shame, you know. I just started going to the gym and stuff, so I see people lifting plates, and I'm right here like barely at two and a half plates, so I'm like, man, like, you know, a shame, but mentally you might be able to do it all, but you shouldn't. Same thing physically, like, you shouldn't do it, but it's an option. It's just probably not the best one if you're trying to learn and be a novice. Always see yourself as a novice. I'm still a novice. I feel, thankfully, I have been put on a platform to give education out, but I would say I'm still a novice in this. I'm ready to learn, and everyone should always be in that mentality too, is to learn, absorb what you can.
Yeah, forever student. I totally agree with that. Starting small is super huge for sure. And yeah, just because you hear some advice from one person doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So try everything. Yeah, and don't be so hard on yourself if it doesn't work out. So I think that's great advice, my friend. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on the show today, man. I'm really excited to put this one out, and I look forward to seeing you as well as other community members at the Entheogen Expo here coming up here in February. Everybody go buy your tickets. I will see you there. And until then, namaste. Have a great day. Don't contemplate, meditate. If you guys enjoyed this video or this episode, make sure to give it a like or a 5-star review wherever you're listening at. Don't forget to comment any questions you guys have and subscribe. Hit the bell icon for future content as well. And share this with your family and friends. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining. Bobby, we'll see you soon. Have a great year, and I'll see you at the expo, okay?
Thanks for having me, yo.
All right. Peace, guys. Thanks.